This week's parsha is Parsha Shmini. Getting back now into the parshios in Sefer Vayikra. And as we did before Purim, I'd like to also include a little bit about Inyanim of Pesach each week as well, to get us into the spirit of Pesach as well. Today in Parsha Shmini, we know that Parsha Shmini speaks about basically two main topics. Topic number one in the beginning of the parsha is the tremendous fire that comes down and consumes the offerings that Aaron HaKohen prepares at the inauguration, Vayhi Bayom HaShmini, the eighth day of the consecration of the Mishkan, and ultimately the death of his sons Nadav and Avihu. So the beginning of the parasha deals with that auspicious day when indeed God finds favor with the tabernacle that they had built and shows that he finds favor with this fire coming down. And the second part of the parasha deals with the simanim, the signs of what makes an animal kosher and what makes an animal not kosher. It's very fascinating, and this will be our question, of why is it that the second part of our parasha deals with these issues. Just to see the pasuk inside, the transition pasuk in source 1, Hashem spoke to Moshe and to Aaron, saying to them, speak to the children of Israel, saying, these are the creatures that you shall eat from among all the animals that are upon the earth, everything that is a split hoof, right? And we know what the different signs are of what the kosher animals are and the non-kosher animals, etc. And the one question I'd like to deal with today, which is a very basic question, and we will see that this question not only deals with our parasha, but really deals with life. I think particularly perhaps influenced by a Purim Suder of Shabbos, and then a Shabbos meal Friday night, and I'm sure Mishloach Manot still flying all over our homes. I'd like to speak about the inyanim of food, and I hope that after today we won't look at food and eating in the same exact way, and then that will be a successful shiur. The question we have to ask ourselves is, why is it that Spedafka, this inyan of what animals are kosher, what animals are not kosher, and why we're not allowed to eat all the creepy crawly and all the different types of non-kosher animals, why is this the first law that is found, A, connected with the consecration of the Mishkan? It doesn't seem to be connected. And B, why is it Bichlal found here in Parashat Vayikra? And obviously there are many answers to this question, and I'd like to look at perhaps two of the approaches. One approach, which we'll see at the end of this year, but I'll make mention of it now, perhaps the most famous approach, which is found in source number 2. Rav Nevenzahl points out, et seder parsh mitzvot ubinyan ha'uma, kav'a Torah b'sefer chronologi. We have a chronological order. We first have the idea where Kadosh Baruch Hu chooses us, the avos ha'olam. He first has the forefathers, and from them comes a nation. And then this nation, this chosen nation, stands at Mamad Har Sinai, and we get the Torah, and we get laws that are found in the Torah. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu involves himself, or we are involved with, building of the Mishkan to create a Am Kadosh, to create a holy nation. And the beginning of Sefer Vayikra, and Parshios Vayikra and Tzav, it talks about the different korbanos, the different sacrifices that we bring, which again, theme is the inyan of Kedusha, the inyan of holiness. And then he says, V'heim chelik ma'uti u'pnimi shel Am Yisrael. This is the inner core of Klal Yisrael, that we have a central place wherein we worship and serve God. Mikan mitzaveh tara sheyesh lavir kedusha zu gam l'toch bayit migurei, v'shetavur kedusha zu gam l'mitpacho v'tagiyav al shulchano shel Yehudi. But it's not enough that we just have a place called the temple, the Mishkan, wherein we have holy service to God. It is crucial. It's imperative to take that Kedusha and transfer it over from the Mishkan into our homes, into our own tables. That not only we have a Shulchan Gavoa, the altar, the table for God, but we have our own Shulchan, our own table should also be consecrated for God. And therefore, the reason why we have the laws of Kashrus found right here, and laws of Kashrus, we know, are one of the fundamental aspects of a Jew's life, is in order to tell us how we can consecrate our lives and dedicate our lives for inyanim of Kedusha, of holiness. That, again, is the classic answer, the Mishkan being a place where we elevate to God, our homes, our tables being places to elevate to God. And again, we'll talk about this a little bit further. But I think even before we examine that answer, I think there is a more fundamental reason why the laws of Kashrut are found as really the opening of the Inyanim of Kedusha, the laws of holiness, even before Parshas Kedoshim, which talks about our Ben Adam Chaveiro, the laws between man and fellow man, and loving one's fellow man, and not taking revenge, etc., that the Torah is Bedavka putting these laws here. What's the reason for this? So I think it's imperative that we understand what is, on one level, and obviously there's much to say, and we've spoken about this in the past, so today will be of a little bit of a different vantage point. What is the key of the ideas of kashrut? Why is it that we're so careful about what we eat? So there's a very beautiful idea in the Nesiva Shalom in Source 4, where the Nesiva Shalom quotes the Ramban in Parsha Mishpatim of saying, on the Pasuk, V'atem V'anche Kodesh Tiyun Li, you shall be for me a people of holiness, U'basar V'sadeh Trefa Lo Tochelu. And connected with this, at the end of the verse, you shall not eat meat that wasn't shechted properly in the field. The Shekibah Letchil B'Isur Hamadcha, says the Ramban, when the Torah is beginning to tell us about the prohibition of eating that which is not kosher. Patach va'amar, the opening line is, va'anche kodesh tiyun li, you should be for me a nation, a holy nation. Klomar, which means, ani chafet shetiyu anche kodesh, vavur shetiyu ruim li ledavka ki bi shani kadosh. Says the Kadosh Baruch Hu, ultimately, the goal in life, and if you have to ask somebody, and the Tziva Shalom develops this at length in many places, why were the Taryag Mitzvos given? Why do we keep Torah and Mitzvos? So the answer ultimately in the Hasidic approach is Dveikus, in order to be able to cling to Hashem. That is why we keep Taryag Mitzvos. It means that I can have a relationship with Hashem. It means I can come close to Hashem. Obviously, these are a bit esoteric ideas, which need to be concretized. But the idea that I have a connection, I can talk to Hashem, I can feel Hashem's presence in my life, this is ultimately why I'm doing Torah Mitzvot, to elevate me to become a more godly person, to allow my spiritual side, my more godly side, to take over my physical life and to be able to elevate and channel that life. The way, one of the ways to achieve this area of Kedusha, of holiness, of Dveikus to Hashem, is through what we consume. That the food that we eat has a tremendous impact in our ability to be Dovuk to Hashem, in our ability to connect to Hashem, in our ability to be an Anshei Kodesh, to be a holy nation. Why is this so? So the Ramban notes, he says in the middle of 5, he says, "Be'inyanei ma'achalot asurot ha-mit'avim u'megashmim et adam u'marchitim oto b'yoter ma'ashem yisparach." Non-kosher food brings a person to a very great distance from Hashem. Why so? So the Ar Scroll Stone Chumash, in quoting a number of commentators, notes in Source 7, he says, this Torah stresses the reason for kashrus in very clear and powerful terms. By observing these laws, the Jew can pull himself up the ladder of holiness. By ignoring them, he not only contaminates himself, but he gradually builds a barrier that blocks out his comprehension of holiness. Just as someone who is constantly exposed to loud music and harsh noise, slowly and imperceptibly, but surely, suffers a loss of his ability to hear, find sounds, and detect subtle modulations. So too, the Torah informs us a Jew's consumption of non-kosher food deadens his spiritual capacities and denies him the full opportunity to become holy. And worst of all, it renders him incapable of even perceiving his loss. Now, obviously, what we see from this source is that when we're talking about that the foods that we eat have an impact in either growing closer spiritually to God or, by the flip side, creating a barrier as imperceptible as it may be, we're clearly not talking about on levels that we can see, feel, touch, taste. This is one of my greatest challenges dealing with 18-year-olds. Everything needs to be measured and felt. And I try to open them up to a world that is not always measured and can be touched and felt. It's a spiritual world, and it has a whole new dictionary. And in our Western minds, it's sometimes difficult to understand this. In our Western mind, we ask ourselves, is this food healthy or not? Does it have food coloring or not? Does it have sweetener? Does it have sugar? We're very much into the physical ingredients and what effect is it going to have. So if something is bad for me, so then, you know, if you give the studies show this way or that way, sugar to kids, either it has no effect, it has an effect, chocolate, whatever it is. While we know that physical food has an effect on a person, likewise, physical food has a spiritual effect on a person, and that which we eat affects who we are. You know, this idea reminds me, and I think it will fit in very beautifully in the way we're about, Emir Tashem, to develop this idea. I have a friend who's tried almost every diet out there, right? I'm sure many of you can relate to that idea. So she says the one that she has found to be the most beneficial, for her at least, is a diet that's based, and some of you may be familiar with this, on blood type. Based on your blood type, you don't eat certain foods. So since she's A positive, she eats red potatoes and not white potatoes, and the list goes on. And she finds that following this diet of her blood type, she therefore is able to eat food that's better for her, you know, metabolism, and therefore she feels much better than she's ever felt before. And here we clearly see that you're going to say to me, what difference does white potatoes make versus red potatoes? So the answer is, I'm not a culinary expert, I can't tell you about the white potatoes versus the red potatoes. But in her mind, I don't know if it's psychological or not, but she's tried a lot, for this type of blood type, red potatoes are better than white potatoes. Why? Because again, when we're talking about food, food doesn't just impact us physically, it has a whole aspect of our mental health and our being. And this spiritually is developed in the Sefer Mimamakim, it's mislabeled in source number 8, where he says, V'chein kotev haramchal, isur malachot ben bi'inyan ha'trefot atzmam, whether it's something that's not kosher or mixed with not kosher or basar v'chalav, eino ela mashchit l'nafsho, it has a negative influence on one's nefesh. And obviously a person can do tshuva for eating these type of things, but recognize kevan she'michnasim begufo shel hadam mamash v'nasim basar mibsaro, why food is so essential in recognizing its spiritual value is because food enters into a person directly. And he goes on by saying, quoting the Reishis Chochma, that it's not just in an ofen chitzoni, in an outer way. No. Ki adavar hatamei nasa chelek ever be'etzam ha'adam va'nefesh milabeshetcha. It becomes part of the bloodstream, right? The food that we eat enters into the bloodstream of a person. And we know that Adam wa nefesh, our blood is our nefesh, is our soul. So when a person eats something that's not kosher, not only does it affect him physically, we're not talking about that, that's a separate question. But whatever we eat, you know, there's a concept of you are what you eat. That's why they say if you eat, you know, foods of animals that are very mean type of animals, so then you become that type of personality. Where is this from? It's from Ki Adamu HaNefesh, that when we eat, the food that we eat enters into our dam, enters into our bloodstream. And then that becomes our nefesh, that becomes our soul. And he quotes here Rav Chaim Vital, who explains, Hinei inyan hamidot hei mutba'ot ba'dam b'nefesh ha'shvela. Our midos, the core of our midos, of our character traits, come from this aspect of our nefesh. And in a certain sense, he says, V'hein kisei v'yisod v'shorish ela nefesh in nine el yonah sikhli ha-shabat shuliyim taryag mitzvot ha-Torah. That in reality, all of the mitzvot of the Torah are based on proper midos. They are the b'msut nefesh ha-yitzodit ha-mechuberi ha-laguf. The ability for us to do mitzvot is being able to use our life force, be able to use our midos properly. And if I have, and I'm using a merchaot in parentheses, in quotation marks, the idea that when we eat, it contaminates us on some level. As the Sichos will say for Shemot, in source 13 and 14, in Sefer Vayikra, Nevinzal points out, he says the idea of tuma, the loti ta'amu bahem, is the idea of the nitmamtem, mitametet nafsho, which means it closes off our spiritual side. Like there's a light, like there's an energy that flows. And when we eat non-kosher food, it has an effect by shutting off, shutting down that spiritual light, our spiritual ability to connect with God, to connect with the deeper parts of our spiritual self. And hence, he says, when a person is not careful about what they eat, so what they are doing is bringing into their life force. They're bringing into the life force, which is really spiritually the source of the mitos, of the character traits of a person, the bringing in aspects which will either be a negative aspect or at the very least be aspects that are going to shut down, close off a spiritual connection with God. And we have to recognize that that which we consume becomes us, becomes who we are, and allows us to function or not to function in certain ways. So just as the physical food affects who we are, likewise, the spiritual food as well affects who I am spiritually and what my capacity is to connect with the holiness and with Dveikus, with Hashem. I'll just mention here, parenthetically, which isn't so parenthetically. You know, when I was learning and preparing this section, so part of me was saying, you know, we all have to be careful about what we eat and the achsherim of what we eat, and everyone has different standards, and that's fine. But, you know, after all, most of us try to be as careful as we can with the food that we eat. Is this really nogea? Is this really practical to speak about today? And then I came across one line in source number 13, in Rav Nevendal Sefer and Sichos Sefer Vayikra, which really I think was the impetus to have me develop a shir. And that is, he says, when we're talking about what we're allowed to eat and we're not allowed to eat, he says, it's not only when we eat things on purpose, it's also by accident. Let's learn together the asterisks in 13. Adam choshev latzmo, a person says to themselves, she'im miher, if he's in a hurry, v'lo badak et apri shebiyado heitev heitev, and didn't check the fruit in his hand, v'day lo yigram lo nesek ruchani, it won't have any spiritual effects on him. Imachal agav kach, if he, by the way, ate a tolad, some worms, some, you know, little bugs, tanav v'chaser mashmur, I mean, who really cares about those tiny little bugs anyway? Dot, dot, dot. No. Those tiny little dot, dot, dots, those tiny little bugs are Isurim in the Torah. And I think here, my friend, perhaps there is a lot of room where we need to be a little bit more careful. I know Eretz Yisrael is a whole different ballgame than in America, but it still exists with certain foods predominantly where it's incumbent upon us to check the food, whether it's the perhaps classic examples that we're all familiar with, raw cauliflower, raw Brussels sprouts, raw broccoli. These are foods that are very difficult to check. And we can't just say, well, let me just rinse them off and wash them. You know, I invite any of you to take, I'm not even talking about a microscope, a magnifying glass, and see how many little creepy crawly things that you will find. I think perhaps one of the most prevalent example, and my daughters know this, even though it's one of their favorite foods, they know very well that they're at a kiddush, they're at a simcha, they don't touch this because they know they're not sure how it was checked, and that is strawberries, right? A lot of bugs on top of strawberries, you know, and how to cut off the top of the stem of the strawberry and make sure that there's no hole in the body of the fruit so that none of the bugs went into the fruit, and then to soak it and then to wash it and re-soak it. It's a whole avoda to eat a strawberry. So I'm not, again, this is not a shiur on how to check for vegetables. That's something that one's local shul can arrange to give a shiur on. What I'm trying to sensitize ourselves to the idea that there are a lot of areas, even in those who think, Baruch Hashem, we're careful about what we eat, we're careful about our achsherim, so we now need to move to the next step, that these little creepy, crawly things are over a lot of Yisurim in the Torah, and that we need to be careful about them as well, and if we're not sure whether something needs to be checked or not, like a banana is a no-brainer, right? But there are other foods that don't need to not needing to be checked, right? But, and pears and apples, but there are other things that do need to be checked. Obviously, if you see a wormhole, I mean, I think all of us have common sense to know, be warned before eating. But this is what we're talking about, recognizing that these foods have the ability to slowly and imperceptibly, aside from the surya, aside from what is wrong, it's also to do, the effect that they have in bringing down our level of sensitivity and closeness to God. And that enters into our nefesh, that enters into our soul, into our blood, and it affects what type of people we are. Rav Matthisyahu Solomon, with hearts full of faith, knows this. He says, 15, only the Jewish people must raise themselves to such a level of refinement, of excellence and character, that they can genuinely forgive and forget, that they can become good friends with those whom they may have considered their worst enemies. The day before, this is something that is demanded only of a Jew. Only the descendants and spiritual heirs of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov have within them, 16, the potential for such magnificent refinement. And therefore, unfortunately, if the behavior of Jews becomes similar to the behavior of those nations that do not share the legacy of our patriarchs, if the dividing line between the nations of the world and the Jewish people become blurred, we can be sure it is not because the nations of the world are becoming vastly improved in their character refinement. This cannot be expected of people that are not the heirs of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. If we see the gap closing, it's because the Jews are falling far short of what is expected of them. It's because they are slipping and sliding down to lower levels. So how do we keep ourselves on higher levels? How do we refine our midos? How do we realize the full potential Jewish talent for excellence and character? The answer is by embracing holiness, Kedusha. And here, Rav Matthisyahu Solomon said something very interesting. We know the Rambam, Maimonides, wrote his classic work, the Yad HaChazakah, wherein it's a guideline, a halachic guideline, where he divides into Yad, 14 volumes. And he gives a separate name for each book and then puts in different mitzvot into the books. He has a book called Sefer HaKedusha, the Book of Holiness. It's very interesting that within this entire book, where usually there are many mitzvot found in each book, in Sefer HaKedusha there are only two mitzvot found, obviously developed. They are Machalos Asuros, forbidden foods, as well as, in 19, forbidden relationships. Of all the mitzvot in the Torah, none fall under the category of holiness, just these two. 20, holiness is what challenges the Jewish people to elevate themselves. Holiness is founded on a basis of midos, of refinement and nobility, which cause us to turn away from forbidden relations and forbidden foods. When we work on this area, by abstaining and not contaminating our souls We come to higher levels of holiness and an even deeper refinement and nobility of character, drawing us ever closer to God. And that is why God created the world. The foods we eat affect us. 21, and that is why certain foods are forbidden foods. Food that is associated with any kind of defilement, whether or not we are aware of it, will cause us to become defiled as well. Even the milk of a pagan wet nurse, which is not quite a forbidden food, should be avoided, because it dulls the heart and gives rise to immoral tendencies. The milk of a woman encapsulates all her strengths and weaknesses, all of her character traits, all her thoughts and impulses. Even a newborn infant should therefore drink only the milk of a woman that exemplifies the character traits of our holy ancestors. Otherwise, that pure baby's heart may become dull and corrupted. And this clearly is based on the famous Medrash. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu was an infant, and he was found in the Nile. He was crying, and he refused to nurse from any of the Egyptian women until Miriam had to come and call his own mother to nurse. And our rabbis tell us that why is this so? He was no more than an infant, but clearly 22, Hashem had instilled in him some kind of reflex aversion to suckling from an Egyptian woman. Why was that? The Gemara says, the mouth that would one day speak with divine presence could not suckle from an Egyptian woman. What does the Gemara mean, the top of 23? At first glance, one might think this was merely a matter of honor, a protocol that should not be fitting for a mouth that has suckled from an Egyptian wet nurse to speak with God. But the Ramah saw a deeper reason. He understood that by drinking the milk of an Egyptian woman, and thereby drawing into himself some of her very essence, Moshe would dull his heart, tarnish his fine character, and open himself up to immoral tendencies. And how could such a person speak with God? And the Gra notes on this, where every single Jew should recognize within them that they have the capacity of holiness, that we have the ability to potentially be speaking to God. Every Jew should aspire to the highest level of holiness, to draw ever closer to God through continuous refinement of midos, which leads us to higher levels of holiness. Unless it is absolutely necessary, why should any Jew forfeit the ability to speak with the divine presence? Obviously, we're not talking about a child who's starving here. Again, seichel is very important. But we are talking about that from a very young age, we understand that that which a child takes in becomes that child, creates the connection. That ultimately, this child will have with God. I know a family, for instance, and I'm not telling you to advocate. I'm not advocating this. I'm just mentioning this. That only uses kosher toothpaste in their family. They said, again, this mindset that we want everything that enters our child's mouth to be holy. One day our children may speak to God. And you look at these children and you understand that these children, there is something different about these children. There's that mindset where the parents, can I know how our 10 children in this family, the parents are raising them with this understanding that we're preparing our children to one day speak to God. We know Mashiach's around the corner, and the Nevi'im speak about how the Bani Mubanos are going to have visions, they're going to have this closeness to God. This is a mindset of holiness to raise ourselves, our families with as well. This is the concept of what we eat affects who we are and ultimately that spiritual connection with God. Before we move on to look more at the positive aspect, I would like to mention that in this essay, Rav Masechiyahu speaks about that it's not only what we saw, the laws of what we eat have this effect, but it's also the laws of forbidden relations are also areas of promiscuity which has an effect on our holiness. Which is interesting, parenthetically, to compare our parasha of Shmini to another very short parasha in Sefer Vayikra coming up, which is Achrei Mos, which deals with Achrei Mos Shnei Bnei Aaron, connecting to our parasha, of when you are allowed to enter the avodah of the Yom Kippur service of the Kohen Gadol. And then the second chapter, after detailing the laws of how the high priest went into the Kodesh Kodashim, it speaks about who you're allowed to marry and who you're not allowed to marry, the whole union of arayos. And again, the theme in both of these parashios is, you want the fire to come down. You want the high priest to enter into the Holy of Holies. You want to have a spiritual relationship with God. You have to work on Kedusha. And Kedusha, holiness, is about what we take in. Ki adam hu ha-nefesh, what we eat, becomes part of our blood. As well as we have to recognize that what we see and the promiscuity around us has an effect. And this has to be from a very young age. And just like from a very young age, we teach children, this isn't kosher. You know, I just read recently, I believe, at least where I read it, the story happened in Toronto, where an African-American looking type person was online, and her child wanted a candy. And the mother said to the child, it's not kosher. So somebody approached the mother and said, are you Jewish? And the mother said, no. So the person said, well, that's curious that you're telling your child it's not kosher. The woman said, I keep hearing women online telling their children it's not kosher. And the children stop and they put the candy away. So I figure it would work with my child too. I'll tell them it's not kosher. The child will put the candy away. Right? But a Jewish child, yes, from a young age, understands if it's not kosher, that's the end of the discussion. It's not a magic formula. It's an understanding and a training toward Kedusha. And likewise, we have to understand that as we say to ourselves, promiscuity, forbidden relations, that doesn't apply to us. So says Rav Matthew Solomon, there are influences which definitely do apply to us. And let's speak about these for a number of moments as we're on the topic of Kedusha. He says, with Egyptian milk, you can't expect a child, 26, to be sanctified with mitzvos. With Egyptian milk, you can't expect him to have refined midos and nobility of character. And he's calling Egyptian milk the influences that are the essence of society in 25 of lewdness and wanton behavior. With Egyptian milk, you can't expect him to learn Torah and relish and delight, with relish and delight. With Egyptian milk, you can't expect him to draw ever closer to God. We look around today at the world in which we live, at the depravity of the modern street, and we see all the abominations of Egypt and then some. Unfortunately, much as we try to protect ourselves, we are all exposed to this contaminated street. The videos, the internet, with all the worst that Egypt had to offer available to everyone at the press of a button. There's no need to go into further detail. We all know the situation. We're all engulfed in a sea of Egyptian milk. And our job has to be not necessarily to say, which is one approach, everything is usur and I will take it out of my house, which is definitely an approach, and try to close off, which is difficult living when it's surrounding you at all times. But another approach, and everyone has to choose the approach appropriate for them, but there has to at least be a mindset that if we are going to have a computer, what sites are blocked? If we are going to have a computer, is it going to be in an open area where there is constant supervision, where people are looking over your shoulder, or is a teenager alone in their room with a computer? I can tell you in my limited experience of how many, or quite a number of women who've had their husbands looking on the computer at things that were inappropriate and then coming and asking, now what? We once had a babysitter, 15, 16-year-old young lady, who asked if she could use the computer. We said yes. And when we looked at what she was looking at, it was inappropriate sites. We have to be careful about what we allow into our homes because this is mamsh at the press of a button. We want to raise our kids with Kedusha. It is a tremendous challenge in our day and age. How can we preserve our pure hearts and spirit? How can we protect the spark of holiness within us? I don't know if in our condition we can appreciate the true meaning of purity and holiness. I don't know if in this corrupt gullus, this deep spiritual exile in which we find ourselves, we can find our way to the level of holiness. But we have to make an effort of Havdalah ben Yisrael la'amin, the dividing line. Our children must be taught from the very earliest age where to look and where not to look. We cannot wait until it's too late. We must protect ourselves and our children from Egyptian milk. We must make rules and build fences. We must seek advice, devise strategies, and above all, send up our tears and our prayers to the master of the universe. On one level, we have to be careful to say to our children, this is appropriate, this is not appropriate. We watch this TV show, we don't watch this. We see movies, we don't see movies. Whatever it is. And be able to say to our children, and I know personally it's very difficult when you take those smaller planes where they don't have TV sets on every seat, but they have only, you know, the one in the main cabin, where you say to the children, you know, you can watch that little cartoon of how to put your seatbelt on, but the other things is just not appropriate, and it's staring you in the face. And how to teach children, this is what we look at, and this is not what we look at. This is an avoda. This is our challenge. On one level, by having to create, and it's healthy, and it's normal, and it's okay to say no. I know in today's society, in our permissive society, it's a challenge that parents don't know how to use that word. Kids know how to use it very well. They need to teach parents a little bit. On the other side, not only building fences and the negative, says Rav Matisyahu, and this will be our final idea moving back to our topic, we also have to work on the positive. We have to increase a greater power in the world of Kedusha. If we can improve and increase and refine the Kedusha of our yeshivas, our synagogue, our schools, our home, we can radiate holiness to the entire world and transform and uplift all of humanity. It's not only about what you can't see, but there has to be the children and ourselves feeling Kedusha in other ways. And when there are opportunities of Kedusha, of holiness, whether it's a chag, whether it's Purim, what we just had, whether Pesach coming up, every Shabbos, if we can enhance the Kedusha, if we can make the Shabbos table holier and more appropriate and draw the children in more and play games with them and make it into a Shabbos experience of you know, trivia on the parasha, whatever it is, then we can create and let them feel that shul is a positive experience and the schools are a positive experience, then they will feel that Kedusha, that holiness from within and have less of a need to then go out and search for meaning and purity and holiness from without. You know, I think this was the impetus for me being under the weather last week and really not feeling well and not even going to work some days. And Rachel, our 10-year-old, really wanted to spend Purim Meshulash, right? It was a 3-day Purim in Yerushalayim. And we had an opportunity of somebody's apartment in the old city to mamish be by the Kotel. We spoke about Purim being a tremendous time of tefillah. So like it was a debate within me. Part of me said to pack up, forget about Purim, Erev Shabbos, which we had in Ramat Beit Shemesh, and then to pack up and go to Yerushalayim on such a short Friday. It's a challenge. On the other hand, if a 10-year-old is saying, I want more Kedusha, I want to be in the old city, I want to be able to, you know, really, like, she was like beaming and bragging, not bragging in a negative way, but in a very positive way, that she's able to daven every tefillah, Maariv, Shachros, Musaf, Mincha, at the Kotel on Shabbos Purim. It's a gavaltic thing. Let them feel that's their Kedusha. Let your 6-year-old have the dream that I dreamt that somebody gave me Shloch Manot to Hashem and they brought it to the Kotel. Obviously, you're right. You're sitting there saying not all of us have a Kotel. Not all of us have a Purim Meshulash. Not all of us can give our children a 3-day Purim and a 3-day Tefillah. You're right. But you can give your children the experience, which is that when you're driving around Mishloach Manot, I was able to finish 107 chapters in my 2.5-hour drive. Okay, I grant you, most people in Israel live in apartment buildings, and I don't let my kids take elevators by themselves when they're climbing up 5 flights of stairs to every building. That does grant me a little bit more time. But at least the kids see that for you, Purim is a time of tefillah, and they feel that passion. And that when you deliver Mishloach Manot, they then say, who's going to get Imas Tehillim to say Tehillim while Imas inside? That's what you need to try to create. Enough said. Final notation on the Kedusha of the food and the effect it has on us, and then we'll move to the positive. It's a story that the Lakach Valibo, Rav Avram Alevi Shor, brings in 32a and B. He says that his mother was born in America, and her father used to personally supervise milk, so that would be Chol of Yisrael milk that they could drink. But she went to public school, and she knew at a young age already that the temptation of eating ice cream, when all the other kids were eating ice cream, and she knew it wasn't Chol of Yisrael, was too great. So as a 12-year-old girl, she made a neder. She swore she would never eat ice cream. And that's how she got through school, where she made a neder not to eat ice cream. And says Rav Shor, who this woman married, Rav Gedalia Shor, right? Rav Shiva Torah Das and the son, our great Rav Shei Yeshiva. How did the children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, Mirtz Hashem, of many generations, become such great people? When you have a mother who says, I refuse to eat ice cream, and make a neder like this, so then you have greatness. You understand that, yes, ice cream is going to have an effect on you. But you know what, my friends? It's not only on the negative, it's on the positive as well. The Torah tells us in Surah 29, it's brought down. The Pasuk says that by David HaMelech, it speaks about that on the Pasuk of Zot HaChayasher Techlu, he says, this is the idea of Lasot Ritzoncha Elokai Chafatzi V'Toratcha B'Toch Me'ai. Your Torah has to be B'Toch Me'ai, inside of me, that the Torah has to really become part and parcel of who I am. And he explains, therefore, in source number 30, he says, this is the idea of eating matzah in particular. This is what the Torah is talking about. That matzah lo Pesach is the only one that we say asher kedishanu mitzvotav. That's kulo Torah. That the hachana for the mitzvah of eating matzah is this week's parasha of machlos achzuros. That if you want matzah to have an effect on you, b'toch me'ai, that food can be positive in you, you have to be careful what you bring in you. And he says so beautifully based on Zohar Kadosh in 31, that matzah is miloshon matzah umariva. Matzah comes from the idea of argument, of fighting. Da'avda mitzvah ta'ima yetzahara. That matzah fights with our yetzahara. Umavriach mimena kol klipot v'sitra achra. And the matzah chases away all the negative forces. And bimkom shachriyato kol shana kula b'chinas milchama. All year round, when we eat, there's the milchama. The negative part of us wants to eat in a certain way and wants us to not be so careful how we eat and what we eat. And that's why bread is called lechem. Lechem is from the word milchama, to fight. Our very bread is a fight, is a struggle. The bread on Pesach is a matzah, wherein the matzah cures us. It's the lechem of refuah. The matzah eaten properly, without any tarova, without anything else mixed in it, has the ability to megaresh, to really chase away the bechinas hara, the negative part of us. This is what was said to the malachim by Lot, sadu libchem, eat, achar tavoru, then you'll pass on. He fed a matzah. Achar tavoru is a play. The sitra achra is going to leave you. That's the power of matzah. That's the power of being able to eat food. If we're careful to understand the power of eating all year, it's the melchama, Pesach, matzah, when I have taken away all those negative influences, I can be able to eat food that's going to be able to elevate me, to chase away the yitzhara, chase away the negative forces, and the matzah becomes a michla damnusa, the bread of Amunah. Mirtz Hashem will talk a lot more about this, which elevates me, elevates my relationship and my tveikus to Hashem. What is all this about, the positive way to eat? In the next couple of minutes, let's speak about this, and then one final idea, and we will conclude. Before a person sits down to eat, there are many questions a person thinks about before they have to eat. And this, again, Rav Nevin Zal speaks about in Source 34. You have to ask yourself, am I allowed to eat now? Am I milchik? Am I fleisha? Do I have to make kiddush first? Do I have to make havdalah first? Do I have to eat in a sukkah? How much am I eating? Am I going to eat part of it here and part of it somewhere else? Do I have to have a kavana that I'm going to be saying a bracha achorna somewhere else? Do I recognize I have enough to eat to say a kazayit? Am I not sure if I have to say a kazayit of the certain amount? Do I have to eat more? Then I have to make sure that truma maisos were taken. This year in Shemitah, you have to ask yourself, am I allowed to eat this food? Am I not allowed to eat this food? Then I have to ask myself, was the food, you know, prepared properly? And then, obviously, I have to wash, sit down, and eat. All of these considerations make it a holy act. Not that I just go into the refrigerator and take a bite to eat. And this is what the Sichos Bavadat Hashem, who delineates so beautifully, and we'll just touch on some of his ideas in 83. He says, anytime we do a mitzvah, we bring down great sparks from heaven. But you know how you can even bring, and this is obviously a Hasidic approach, even greater energy from heaven? In the Dvarim of Rishut, in the things that are permissible, where there's not necessarily a mitzvah involved. If we do it in the correct way, we're bringing even a holier amount of sparks down to our world. What is the correct way? Final page. 37. Seder Achila Atzma. We have to have the machshava, the dibur, and the mindset that I recognize that I'm about to do is to create a connection with God, that I'm eating this food to allow me to be sustained. And in fact, he quotes a Hasidic Rebbe who used to go to the mikveh before eating, not before davening. Because he recognized that it's when you're davening, you're doing something spiritual. You don't need to go to the mikveh to purify yourself. But when you're eating and you have to recognize that this physical thing is a spiritual act, then you need to go to the mikveh to recognize this. He says the way we eat, derech eretz, that we don't eat. I mean, you know, basic manners. We don't eat with our talk with our mouth full. We don't eat. We don't look at another person while they are eating. We don't raise our voice while we're eating. He says there's an idea, and this is brought down in the Shulchan Aruch, v'shelo yochav v'lo yishteh me'umat. This is something that should be introduced to some of the kiddushim in shul. You shouldn't eat or drink standing up. Whatever you take, something to eat, something to drink, you should sit down like a mensch to eat and to drink. This is also a way to eat, is elevating the eating experience. Eating is not just the consumption of food. Eating is a spiritual experience because that which I eat becomes my nefesh, becomes my blood, becomes my soul, becomes my life force to serve God. And therefore, how I put the food in, not only what the food is, but how I physically put this food in, my manners, how I approach it, has to be done in the most appropriate and proper way possible. Obviously, the idea to be meharher b'divrei Torah, that I speak about words of Torah. Every single meal has to have words of Torah. Chazal tell us that otherwise it's like eating with divchei metim, say a short dvar Torah. Clearly not to speak words of negativity. And again, that which we eat, and what we've spoken about in other years, which I'm not even touching now, how we eat elevates the different domain, the chai, the sameach. We elevate the different elements of our food to the service of God. That's a whole different idea. But just the idea that eating is a spiritual experience of connecting to God, every meal should have divrei Torah. He goes so far to say in 38 that every bite a person eats should be dugma to the korban. It should be a machal kodesh. Every bite I eat, obviously it's very high levels. I'm thinking about how I can connect to God. But if, at least, if we had to pick a place to start, if we can't start at every meal, which is a great place to start, let's talk about Shabbos, that every Shabbos meal, we create an environment of Kedusha. Every Shabbos meal, we have Divrei Torah, we learn from a Sefer, whatever it is, in English, it could be Halacha, it could be Musar, it could be Machshava, whatever it is, but something that's going to elevate the table. The Shabbos table is not the time to talk about shul politics, what the Rav spoke about and how the Rav doesn't know what he's talking about, how the kids' teacher don't know what they're talking about. It's not a time for negativity. It's a time to elevate the experience to be a close experience to God. And I think if we just thought about this for a moment, that every time we take a nash, every time we sit down to eat, we recognize that we have to ask ourselves, why am I eating this? For what purpose? To go closer to God, to be able to have energy to serve God. Let me look at what I'm eating. Let me look at the hechsher on what I'm eating. Make sure I'm eating it, saying a bracha rishona. Make sure I'm saying a bracha chorna. Make sure I'm saying a dvar Torah when I'm eating. It takes the whole physical act and it elevates it to a totally different dimension. And that's the idea that we spoke about originally in our original question. Why is this parsha of Machlos Asuros, the laws of Kashrut, found with the consecration of the temple? Because this is really talking about our mini temples. How do we become holy? We become holy by knowing that that which I eat has an ability to affect my soul, my relationship to God. Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't nurse, from an Egyptian woman. The very, very young child, it can dull their soul. Recognize that the way I eat has an effect on what I'm eating. Recognize that the laws of Kedusha are about food and inappropriate behavior. These are the two aspects that allow a person Kedusha. And then obviously one shulchan, one's table with which we begin with, has to be a shulchan to Hashem. The food being kosher, the divrei Torah at the meal, how I sit down, the halachic requirements, this too is an elevated experience. And finally, the last idea, my friends, and we will close with this. It's a beautiful Zohar Kadosh, I mean, Mamakim brings down in 43 and develops in 46, where he says that just like the food that we take in, it's allowing our nefesh, allowing our soul to be able to survive. That which comes out of our mouth, our ruach memalala, our speech, also has to be appropriate because this too is part of the life force of a person. Just like food is a life force, that which we take in, that which comes out of our mouth, our speech, is also a reflection of our life force. And that's why Rav Matisyahu says in 43 that when we speak about v'ramtanu mikol halshonos, that God, and we'll say this a lot on Yantif for Pesach, you raise us above all the other languages, v'kidashtanu b'mitzvosecha, and you sanctified us with your commandments. Obscene language is a threshold of forbidden relations. Coarseness in speech leads to coarseness in deed. The Torah set the Jewish people apart from the other nations by the mitzvot of forbidden relations. And Lashon HaKodesh, the language of the Torah, protects us from this contamination. And that's why even if we're not careful to speak Lashon HaKodesh and we speak other languages, heaven forbid that the obscenities and vulgarities spoken by the promiscuous people among whom we live should pass our lips. Even when we speak English or French or Spanish, we must be careful to keep our word holy. As long as we maintain the holiness of our speech, even if we're not speaking Lashon HaKodesh, we can say, you raised us above all the other languages. We have to be careful of the purity and holiness of our language, no matter which language we speak. So just as we have to be careful about that which comes into our mouth, and the heksher, and the worms, and the bugs, and the strawberries, and we're careful about that, we also need to weigh very carefully what comes out of my mouth. Is this appropriate? Is this hurting somebody's feelings? Is this lashon hara? Is this vulgar speech? Is this obscene speech? Is this appropriate? Or this is not appropriate? And again, our children pick up through osmosis so clearly. And if we needed a place to begin practically, let it be our Shabbos tables. Let us start with even one meal on Shabbos, then move to two, and then move throughout the week. We start with Friday night. We start with our Shabbos table, not talking about things that are inappropriate to speak about at a Shabbos table. We talk about things that are stories. Kids love stories. Obviously, ages will depend. We talk about things that are going to be exciting for them. We raise up our speech. We talk about Shabbos talk. We make the Shabbos meal a holy experience. Our kids feel Kedusha. Our kids look forward to this meal. It's a real special family time, but not only just a family time. They can feel the Kedusha. They can feel something different. We talk differently. We act differently. And then when we're able to make this part and parcel of our lives, and we can introduce this into the Shabbos meal, Shal Shudith, into B'lav HaMalka, entering the week, we're able to then feel that closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because we have to recognize that that which comes in our mouth, that which comes out of our mouth, that which surrounds us has a very, very direct effect on the Kedusha, on the holiness of each and every one of us. And therefore, my friends, I bench us as we begin our climb through the Pesach awareness, so to speak, that we are trying to purge ourselves not only from our chametz in our homes, but from the chametz within us, from the negative forces within us, to recognize the positive power of food, that we can allow the matzah to do that fighting of getting rid of our yetzer hara, to allow it to be the bread of refuah, the bread of emunah. But we have to start not only in our homes to get rid of the chametz, but inside of ourselves and our homes to get rid of the negative influences that surround us. Shavua Tov.